This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Money Moves on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Friday, folks. Welcome in to another wonderful edition of Money Moves. It's Jonathan Von Tobel flying solo for the day. Storm Bonatoni out on assignment. She'll be back on Tuesday. But we have a really good show on tap for you today. And I laugh because it feels like a loose and fluid sort of Friday. Hectic start to the day behind the scenes. Lots of traffic and all sorts of crazy stuff happening. And we have a lot to get to on the program today as well. So we're going to keep it loose, as we generally kind of do when Stormy is out. Although I do get a little bit more straight line, a little bit more serious when Stormy's not here, because why not, right? We do have a Major League Baseball contest set to begin in the next 20 minutes. So let's start there before we get to our rundown, get to a little bit of the National Football League and some more. But the St. Louis Cardinals set to do battle here with the Chicago Cubs. Let's hit some numbers really quickly as this game is going to get started in the next few minutes. Matthew Liberatore getting the start for the Cardinals, plus 168 dog. Cubs, minus 180 coming back on the other side. Clay Holmes making his second start in a Cubs uniform. Last time we saw him, the first time in a Cubs uniform, on the road against Kansas City, four innings. Faced 18 batters, gave him six hits, four earned runs, struck out one, and walked two. It is the fourth consecutive start for him in which he has walked two or more, but it's a little misleading considering of those four, three of them came in May. Of course, shelved with some injuries. So I think you're just waiting. You know, this, I think, buy from the Chicago Cubs was hoping that Holmes is going to round into form by the time we get into the postseason. So seems pretty strong to lay that $1.80 here, considering what we know about Holmes at this point. Liberatore not really coming in great form. ERA of 5.15, expected at 5.00, and a FIP of 4.70. Last time we saw him, gave him five earned runs against the Colorado Rockies. Nothing really strong, but we're going to keep track of this throughout our program here today. But worth noting, the Cubs look like they're set to go off as about $1.80 favorites with Holmes on the hill. So with that, we'll wait for that one to begin. Until then, let's get the show started as we always do.
It's time for the top headlines and topics of the day. This is The Rundown.
You know, I haven't seen a lot of movies, but I have seen The Jungle Book, and Bare Necessities, I believe, is one of the tracks of the movie, right? I think it's Blue that sings the song. Bare Necessities are at the top of the list today because there are some necessities for the Chicago Bears. Two things, in fact. We got to see if Caleb Williams can be on track. Can he actually do the little things, the easy things, better this year? And can this defense continue to do what it did last year? Bears are one of those teams that look like they're going to snap back to reality this season, so it would be necessary for them to maintain some sort of form if they want to make it back into the postseason. We'll see if they can do that as part of our training camp tour, which will continue in Chicago next year, or I don't know the timeline exactly, but one day will it be in Indiana? We'll find out. Next up, campus and clubhouses. We do have a lot to get to in college football. Cole Kublik, is going to join us here. Former Auburn offensive lineman, covers the SEC for the SEC Network. A lot to get to with the Southeastern Conference and, of course, Major League Baseball in full swing. We do have to talk about the rest of the Major League Baseball card. And speaking of college football, too, we cannot forget Von Delzell is going to be with us. We are getting closer, so we might as well continue our coverage. We talked to Tim Murray yesterday about week zero and week one plays. We will do the same with Vaughn of NBC Sports coming up in the second hour. But we start with the big one. First impressions from last night, the first full day of NFL preseason action. And we got a lot of data to sift through, even though we only had six games on the card yesterday. But a rough day generally for bettors, specifically those bettors who moved the market yesterday in those contests. Via Circa graded lines, so these are the closing lines, the opening lines that I'm using my data for yesterday. A smattering of differences in some of the numbers, obviously, but we use Circa for the sake of our experiment here. Underdogs go 5-0 against the spread. Chargers here, they closed as a pick. Some spots they were a dog, so that one, it depends on where you look, go 6-0. Two outright wins from the underdogs, though, here at Circa. Pittsburgh and Arizona get those victories outright in the preseason action last night. Totals, a perfect 6-0 to the under yesterday in the NFL preseason. For the postseason, preseason as a whole, if we include the Hall of Fame game, 6-1 so far. And I thought this was the most interesting nugget, and it does speak to what we have hit on this show, what you have heard from many other shows as well, which is the preseason, the volatility of the lines, and where you're betting them. We discussed this at length with the Lions and the Bengals. Lions end up staying inside of that number pretty much the entire way against the Cincinnati Bengals. But those bettors that shape the market and the ones that you potentially want to tail, well, they were laying 3.5 with the number that closed 6.5, 7 in multiple spots yesterday. So yesterday, sides that moved 2 or more points, you went 2-3 against the spread. If you bet the opening line, so the two games that covered Tennessee and Indianapolis, you went 0-5 against the spread in the games that moved 2 or more points if you bet the closing line. So if you're just chasing steam, came in late yesterday, you went 0-4, you at least got 2 in the pocket and dampened the blow, we'll say, if you actually got in on those opening 9 lines, again, that moved about 2 or 3, 2 or more points. Again, I'm only mentioning 5 games here. Did not include the Chargers game because here at Circuit it was kind of ping-ponging back and forth. So for the sake of that data point at the very least, the transparency being that just the 5 games, if you bet the opening lines, you were 2-3 against the spread on the side that moved 2 or more points. You were 0-5 against the spread against the closing lines. So it speaks to a couple of things, right? First thing is, you just got to bet. If you're going to bet some of these things, guess what? Getting the best of the number is the best opportunity you're going to have to set yourself up for success. You still went 2-3 against the spread, but guess what? I'd rather go 2-3 against the spread than 0-5 against the spread. So if you're just chasing, you took it on the chin yesterday. But the other part of this, too, is, look, preseason in general, bettors like it because you can get a ton of closing line value, and closing line value generally sets you up for success in the larger sample size. It also just goes to show that you don't really mean or know that much. And you can kind of guess at what's going to happen here. And the value of players as well. Arizona is a pretty good example. Carson Beck, while we were on the air yesterday, we had missed the news. I had missed the news that he had a rib injury. And that's why that line was moving while we were on the air. But it doesn't really mean that much for Arizona in the grand scheme of things when they actually go out there and get the win over the Las Vegas Raiders. Let's talk about the Raiders because they were front and center. Maybe it's just because we were here in Las Vegas. I was doing local radio as well, so probably a little bit more of a focus on this Raiders game. But was an interesting one nonetheless. Total had gotten bet up there. Talked about the line movement, the Carson Beck injury, and of course the debut of the number one overall pick in Fernando Mendoza. So a lot of eyes out there on Allegiant. Fernando Mendoza yesterday, 10 of 16 and 97 yards, 1 touchdown, no interceptions. Said to the media afterwards that, you know what, it was a good experience.
It was great to get out there, get my feet wet. You know, at first, especially the first drive, felt a little sped up because so much anticipation and excitement. However, I feel like my teammates around me protected me very well, and they helped slow me down. And I think it was a good experience.
Yeah, you got to wonder for Mendoza and the Raiders if they're going to be a team that potentially, and I know to the closing number that game still went under the total, but if they're going to be an overplay here in the preseason, just generally, again, if you're talking about closing number went under the total, opening number went over the total. But the defense didn't look particularly great, but Kubiak clearly seems to be scheming up a little bit here and trying to get this offense set up for success. Had a really strong first half in terms of scoring. So I do wonder if that's going to be something from a betting note as we move forward with the Raiders, if that's worth tracking. For what it's worth, from a PFF standpoint, the second highest graded passing grade for the 3 quarterbacks that got in the game for the Raiders, that was Fernando Mendoza. A relatively mundane stat line, though. Average at the target, 7.7 yards downfield. Yards per attempt at 5.7. Made some pretty good tight window throws, as we saw as well. And the most important part, as you know, that I love, and I think it's the most important, did not put the ball in danger. 0 turnover worthy plays for him. And in fact, no turnover worthy plays for the Raiders quarterbacks in general. And a crisp start for Kirk Cousins. 5 of 6, threw a touchdown on 6 dropbacks in that game. So do wonder what this looks like now. Didn't really have to do that much. Average depth of target for Kirk was just 4.8 yards downfield, but the Raiders put together very good performance. The other one that we saw yesterday that everybody was impressed by, and rightfully so, and this is, I think, one of the bigger lessons when you're talking about starters, their value, and we don't really know and don't really think that we can quantify what a starter means in a preseason game, because the Packers, they go off as pretty solid favorites on the road against the Pittsburgh Steelers. They're up 3-0 at the end of the first quarter, and it's all Pittsburgh from there. Steelers win 28-9. Drew Aller, the story, 10 of 13, 153 yards, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. Wildly impressive performance. Told the media afterwards, complete team effort, not just me.
I mean, I think my job as a quarterback is to go out and put up points no matter what the situation is. So I feel like we did a good job of that. And it wasn't just me out there. I had 10 other guys and then including the coaching staff and obviously with Coach McCarthy calling the plays, but the whole offensive staff doing a great job of, you know, getting us into successful plays and allowing us to go out there and be successful. So it's a total team effort and no matter what. And then obviously defense and special teams, you know, did a really good job tonight, too. So it wasn't just one phase or one player that won the game tonight.
Now, of course, we're probably going to run to bet Drew Aller to win Offensive Rookie of the Year, right? No, but again, from a preseason standpoint, I think you marked this down. Aller seemed to really thrive in the system with McCarthy. We'll see if that really does matter as we move forward in the preseason. But another one to note, you know, quarterback play, how they operate in these systems. It does seem that Aller at least has a good grasp of what he wants to do. And here's the thing, if he is going to perform above expectation against a lot of third and fourth stringers, obviously pretty good for the Steelers as well. So Aller, something to write home about as well, a more explosive performance for Drew Aller and the Pittsburgh Steelers, which leads us to today, Friday schedule, a pretty deep one. We get three, but three intriguing ones. Let's start, though, with Tampa Bay and New York, because I thought this was pretty interesting. Let's hear from Aaron Glenn, guy. Actually, you know, we'll push Aaron Glenn back. We'll talk about the Jets a little bit later because I don't want to get up against this clip and not have anything to fall back on. So let's talk about the Denver Broncos and the Atlanta Falcons really quickly. First off, head coach Sean Payton telling reporters Bo Nix not going to play in this game today, but instead will play the following 2 weeks. Remember, Nix coming off of that ankle surgery. He's been practicing fully throughout camp. So we know that Jarrett Stidham and Sam Ehlinger are going to get a half each for the Denver Broncos. For the Atlanta Falcons today, Tua Tagovailoa is going to get the start. He has not been named the starting quarterback, so technically still in a battle, one would assume. Although Michael Penix has not been cleared for 11-on-11 work, he will not play today. So what does that mean? Rotation for the Falcons. After Michael Penix, Cooper Rush and Jack Strand are going to come in behind Tua Tagovailoa. Worth noting the quarterback rotation there. Miami and Washington, also worth pointing out here today as well. Malik Willis is expected to start for Miami. Jaden Daniels is not expected to play against the Miami Dolphins. Miami, now Washington has some new faces as well along the sideline, but Miami, of course, new faces everywhere and a lot more to play for in the sense of establishing both culture and just continuity with some of these new faces. It's pretty much a rebuild roster. Every single person, almost every single person in terms of their position group is a new face. And so one would expect a pretty good effort, maybe some game planning there for Miami today. Commanders initially opened up in that one as a 1.5-point favorite. We'll get you some of the numbers and what it looks like from there. But on the other side, let's talk a little bit of baseball and more. Adam Rosenberg is going to join us. We've got his best bets for the slate and more next on Money Moves. So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match. Here's the thing. Pro bettors spend thousands on data and tools. But what they don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. VSiN Pro gives you access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Sorry, Justin. I can't remember. Do I have a read here? I have to ask my producer, Justin. Next segment? Okay. Or you do? Okay. All right. Look, it's a Friday. All right. I'm a little loose right now. I have no idea what's going on. I got wrapped up in trying to find some breaking news. But it doesn't matter. There is no breaking news, by the way. I just thought something came down. With that, we reset. We reset. That's right. Just like any good quarterback, it's the next play here. Let's move on to the next play. Much like Carson Beck. Adam Rosenberg is here with us. Gives us a little bit of time here today on this Friday. We appreciate it, buddy. Thank you very much. You can follow him up on X at Hey Rosenberg. We've all been there before. Let's talk a little baseball, though. Let's talk about my Angels first and foremost, because we have a lot of different angles here for Anaheim that I want to get your thoughts on. We'll start with the game tonight before we get to big picture, because they do get to take on the Kansas City Royals. Looking forward to this just because the Angels, I have nothing to look forward to in my life in general, but Grayson Rodriguez brings me joy because I like to watch a lot of high-scoring baseball games, and they have followed behind him, considering how poorly he has been pitching. What are we doing today, though, with this one? Right now, we're looking at Royals about $1.09, you're laying on the road with them, total 8.5, shaded to the under ever so slightly at DraftKings.
So first of all, I do think of you every time I do an Angels segment, just because, you know, you are an Angels fan. I think 2 years ago I came in with Ron Washington for manager of the year, and you just said get out.
And then he did get out, and then we saw him eating chicken wings in the booth, I think the day after he had like a medical leave or something like that, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. Look, both these teams stink. I actually do think this is a relatively good Grayson Rodriguez spot. That's not saying much, but look, Angels versus righties, sub 100 WRC plus on the season. It's 66 over the last 12 games, 67 over the last six games. So this team is what it is against righties. That would be them going against Seth Lugo. 2.83 runs per game over their last 12 with a 30% strikeout rate. Everybody is hitting their K props against this team. But I'm going to go with the under here. This Royals team, which I have been telling people for the last 3 years, I believe is cheating when they are not at home. They stink either way. This is an 8.5 line. Obviously, you got to deal with that Angels bullpen at times on this, but I don't trust either of these offenses. I think this is a little high. And like I said, I do think this is a relatively good spot for Grayson off the road. So under 8.5, let's go with that for this one.
All right, let's zoom out for the Angels because right now they are very close to having the honor of the fewest wins in Major League Baseball in this regular season, in contention with a few teams, including a division rival in the Athletics. Do we think it's a possibility that they could have the worst record in the Major League? And is that something you would worth playing at this point right now?
Yeah, you know, there was a month where this team was really fun. And I, you know, I'm not trying to rub this in, but this, in my opinion, is the worst run franchise in MLB is the Angels. So I plus 225, they're a half a game out of being the worst team. The Pythag actually, you know, says that they're better, and the Pythag actually says that the Athletics, who have the worst record, are worse. But this roster and this pitching staff just overall stink. It's just not run well. The vibes are bad. I don't know if Suzuki's the right guy there. It's just a plus 225 for the team that's actually playing the best out of all the four teams that are meshed in that bottom. They're 5-5 in their last 10. Mm-hmm. I think plus 225. Let's sell high on this Angels team for the worst record at more than 2-1.
It does not hurt if you state facts. Yeah, they are the worst run team in Major League Baseball. They've been absolutely awful, and we're just praying for the day that Artur Moreno decides to sell the team, which doesn't seem to be happening anytime soon. Let's stay in the division, though. I am high on this Rangers team. I've kind of been chasing this dragon for a year and a half now, and I'm hoping they don't let me down this year. They're on the road against those Athletics. We're looking at a near-pick price between the two. Total's 9.5, shaded to the under a little bit, depending on where you're looking. How are we going to handle this pitching matchup, this game overall?
So this is another spot where I like Kumar. Kumar Rocker has been better over the last month. He's overall for the season been better on the road. The whole Sutter health produces runs thing that this season hasn't really been the case for this A's team, which I just discussed. That team stinks. And they have 39 home losses this year, and 34 of them are by two or more runs. So let's take this Rangers team to pile it on. A's have the worst bullpen in baseball by quite a margin. ERA of 6.16 in their bullpen over the last 21 games. So let's take this Rangers team to put it together, score some runs on them late. I remember the other day I went to bed for the Rays Angels game, and it was relatively tight in the first five, and I woke up and the Rays had won the game by 7 runs. So this is absolutely possible. I know the Rangers haven't done a ton of run line wins this year, but if they're going to do it anywhere, they're going to do it at Sutter Health. They're going to do it against this A's team. So give me this, the Rangers on the run line. Look, you can take the money line. It's cheap, but look, a little bit of extra plus money because you have to struggle through watching this game. So plus 144 for the Rangers to win by 2 or more.
Adam Rosenberg with us at Hey Rosenberg up on X, Major League Baseball betting analyst. All right, let's take a look at the American League East. Speaking of the number 7, they won. The Red Sox did 7-0 to snap their losing streak against the Toronto Blue Jays the other day. Now they get the Pirates. It's Bubba Chandler and it's Jake Bennett. Not side, but I think a first 3 play is where we're going here today.
First five. An under 3.5. Bubba Chandler's been a bit better. I still think he's pretty mid, but he's been a bit better. Good spot for the Pirates coming home. They did pile it on in the finale against the Marlins. It's good for them coming home. Those Red Sox, man, you know, the last 10 days have not been playing well. After that A series kind of fell apart for them at home, and they haven't looked great offensively. They're also averaging less than 3 runs on the road in their last 21 games. Pittsburgh can't hit lefties to save their life. So I do like Bennett here going against the Pirates. I feel like the Red Sox have 7 lefties in their rotation. It's just everybody in Sonny Gray is basically a lefty with this team. So I'm going to go with the Red Sox also on the road, coming off another road series, Pittsburgh coming home. I like this to be an under in that first five. So give me the alt under, though, of +146 for under 3.5. It's kind of a thing for me is I always take an alt. I always will go for the alt under 3.5 when I see a 4 or 4.5 as the first five. Yep, so plus one on it.
Sides and totals out of the way. Let's talk about some player props here today. Really interesting series getting started. Cleveland and San Diego, two teams in the throes of a wild card race in their respective leagues. Gavin Williams going to get the start for Cleveland. How do we want to play him today against the Pod Squad?
So I'll quickly shoehorn a nice little, hey, I've been talking about the White Sox for a year and nobody listened to me. So we'll see what happens with them. Though I do think the Tigers are still worth betting on that division. Cleveland has spun out 5-10 in their last 15. I believe they've lost 7 of their last 9, but they're back home after a road trip. And just like you would in football and any other sport spots, this is a great Gavin Williams spot. He is the ace. He has the best whiff stuff in the league right now. His best whiff stuff, obviously, on this team. And his K prop is pretty low, even against this Padres team that isn't like Padres teams of the past that really doesn't strike out. They just really have crazy kind of home road splits. But Gavin Williams' K stuff's really good. I think you're getting plus money for him to have 8 Ks, plus 135. He's done this in 11 of 24 starts, 6 of his last 10, 4 of his last 5. And, you know, he's averaging 11.5 K per 9 and a 33% K rate in his 6 innings that he likes to paint around. I think this is a really good Gavin Williams stop the bleeding spot for the Guardians. So I'm going to take his Ks. I think it's one of the better ways that you could back him today.
All right, and in the American League East, Orioles and Rays, Steven Matz is going to get the start. Former Las Vegas 51, by the way. Nobody cares. The old minor league team out here now, the Aviators. What are we doing at the back end of this lineup for the Rays? Cedric Mullins, I believe, is the focus of your wager here.
We also got the return of Chris Bassitt, who I believe is the same age as us. Let's go with Chris Bassitt. So Chris Bassitt on the mound. I completely forgot he's on this team, but we got a nice little revenge angle here with Cedric Mullins. Get some of those lefty platoon splits on a guy who hasn't pitched in the majors in 2 months. Over 2.5 total bases at +376. And over 3.5 total bases, which is a home run, at 543. His home run is 640, so I figured actually if you actually ladder his bases on here, you could probably make out a little bit better. You don't have to worry about that whole home run drag or whatever Twitter's saying. I think home runs are being pulled back by baseball is the latest rumor that I heard. So I do like him. He does this a lot more at home. He's had 10 games at home with 3-plus total bases. 9 of these games, he had 4-plus total bases. He just loves to hit this at home. You know, he's just been, again, as a lefty, he's just been crushing it against righties. It's 687 OPS, but he's been a lot better lately with a 350 over the last 10 games against right-handed pitching. So Cedric Mullins, I like you to have a base fiesta in Florida against Chris Bassitt and the Baltimore Orioles. So we're going to go with some of those alt player props there for them.
Handygraphs is the spot. You want to check that out. Adam Rosenberg up on X. Hey, Rosenberg is the handle. Adam, we appreciate it, man. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Yeah, man. I'll see you in a couple weeks.
Yes, we'll get you in the studio for sure. I got to get out to Las Vegas as we are getting closer to football season. Everybody's descending upon our city. So check out Adam again, Handygraphs at Hey Rosenberg. We're underway in Major League Baseball in our one midday game. Scoreless as we head to the bottom of the first inning between the Chicago Cubs and the St. Louis Cardinals. Let's get back to football, though, because it is football season. Cole Kublik's going to be with us on the other side, SEC Network. Is he with me? Is he as high on the Auburn Tigers potentially as I am? We will see if that's going to be the case and whether or not there could be some madness in the SEC. We'll find out on the other side here on Money Moves.
Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Week zero of college football, days away. Technically, anything is days away. And the NFL regular season right behind it. Now is the time to get your edge with the VSiN Pro subscription. Join VSiN Pro today. Get instant access to both our college football and NFL betting guides packed with team previews, power ratings, proven betting systems, and more. Start today for just $9.99. Save 50% with a VSiN Pro annual subscription as well. Sign up now at VSiN.com/subscribe. VSIN.com. /subscribe. With that, we head out to the Progressive guest line. Welcome in Cole Kublik, who's with us here, SEC Network, and of course, a former member of the Auburn Tigers, which is where I wanted to begin. In the aforementioned college football betting guide, Cole, I wrote up the SEC in its entirety. There are two teams that I came away with very impressed by, very excited by. One of them was the Auburn Tigers. I essentially phrased it as, look, can USF in this, you know, different uniform with everything coming in, can they have this success? They have one of the best returning quarterbacks in college. Am I too high on these Tigers? I think they can make a lot of noise here.
I think they can make some noise. I think what they do, once you see the continuity on the field early, I believe Auburn's going to be ahead of schedule. That's a massive advantage over the rest of college football, where you have a lot of teams, their offensive lines, quarterbacks, receivers, not necessarily going to be on the same page. They've been in that system. They've had the reps, and it's intricate the way that you learn the offense that Alex Golish runs, where to line up, how to line up, how to run the play and go to your spot on the field in the next play, which official to give the football to. There are details that take time, take reps to be able to understand fully and go out there and be able to execute at a high level. The fact that a lot of these guys have done it together, I think, gives them big advantages across college football. But once you get to week 3, 4, 5, what can you add? What can you stack to that? What can you be after those things are already on display? And then you got to stay healthy too, because I don't think they have the depth that some other teams in the Southeastern Conference have. Defensively, I think the good news for Auburn is you lost a couple of guys that made plays, but they weren't a defense that was led by playmakers. They were a defense that led by how it was designed and how it was run through DJ Durkin. He'll be back. So I think that's big. The problem here with me getting too far ahead on Auburn, and I love it, I think Alex Golish is a great coach, he's going to do good things, is just the middle of the league is so crowded with teams that could be 2-3 games above their total or 2-3 games below their win total. And we just have no idea. The Florida, Missouri, Tennessee, South Carolina, Auburn, all of those teams kind of jammed together. I don't have LSU at the top of the pack with Georgia, Texas, and a few others like a lot of people do. They could even slide there. What if Ole Miss does take a step back? Maybe now they're in that boat as well. So that's the problem for me is I think it's going to be highly competitive week in, week out in this league. And I just don't know how many teams are truly going to be able to separate or exceed expectations.
Yeah, those coin flips, essentially, right? You got to get them to go heads your way almost every time, and that's hard to do with a 50-50 shot. Win total, by the way, for Auburn, 6.5. Think they can go over, grab those 7 wins. We'll see if that's going to be the case. And I'm glad you brought up Durkin, too, because I thought that was a low-key smart move by Golish to bring him in. You have an SEC defense that's one of the best ones in the SEC a season ago. Let's hit on one of these teams on Auburn's schedule, though. What are you hearing, if anything, about Faison Brandon and how this is going at quarterback for Tennessee? Because there's a lot of really good pieces on that offense, and it's whether or not this true freshman can come in and keep this going for Heupel.
Yeah, I wouldn't count George McIntyre out just yet. He's been there. He's been in that system. He's a little bit longer, a longer strider, not as fleet of foot, not going to be as twitchy from a change of direction standpoint. But I do think he has enough arm to make the throws that the offense required. Here's the advantages that he will have. I don't think they have to add a lot of quarterback run because I think the offensive line is going to be the second best in the SEC. I think your running back with Deshaun Bishop, you're fantastic. You have a good group of tight ends. And their offseason study the last few years has been, how do we become more physical? How do we learn how to push people around and stay within what we've been running by widening people out, utilizing tempo, stretching the field at times? And they've been successful doing it. So I think they're going to be able to play battering ram some if they want. They might not need a quarterback that's dynamic. They might not need a quarterback that gives you a lot in the run game. If they do and they find out the run game's getting stuck because of the receivers or different things of that nature, maybe Faison Brandon steps in, becomes the guy that you need to lean on, begin to build for the future. But I think that one goes down to the wire. I think you could potentially see both play early. But they got to have things figured out when they make that week 2 trip to Atlanta, because that game against Georgia Tech going to be no joke, specifically if Aaron Carter, linebacker, is out for that one.
Cole Kublik with us again, SEC Network analyst, former Auburn offensive lineman as well. All right, you mentioned it in your analysis about your Tigers, so let's talk really quickly about LSU. Transfer portal class, by some standards, the best in the country. But I'm kind of with you. I have some trepidation as like the hitting the ground running sense for Lane Kiffin. Why do you have that pause when it comes to them?
Well, the offensive line was atrocious last year, and you add a guy or two to it, but I don't think one guy in your offensive line that has an elite set of skills all of a sudden just completely changes you. Sam Levitt's got to stay healthy. Your best ability is availability. He has missed games and missed practices, so I think it's fair to have a little bit of doubt of, is he going to be available and on the field for the entire stretch of an SEC season? they are not prototypical LSU at running back either. Lane Kiffin wants to run the football. So if the offensive line doesn't catch up and the running backs aren't dynamic, how much success can they truly have there to open things up in the passing game to allow Sam Levitt to be successful? Good group of wide receivers through the portal, which I think can help. And Tre'Davious Green is the name you need to know that could truly flourish in this offense at tight end. He's essentially an NBA swingman playing tight end. He can go get anything, but you got to have the other parts of the offense going to unlock that tight end. And they'll all tell you, all the guys that run that offense, if it's Jeff Levy, if it's Lane Kiffin, Charlie Weiss Jr., the tight end is the position that truly becomes difficult to defend because of how they run it. And if you have that guy, he can be incredible. Defensively, love Blake Baker, love Whit Weeks. I don't know if all the other pieces are going to be as good as some people look at and say all of a sudden they're going to be dominant. There's a lot of players that still have not played on the same football team. This is still a new coaching staff for the most part. I just think when you put all that new together, it doesn't automatically work. Then you throw in one of those emotional games early against Ole Miss. I actually think the more dangerous game is when they come back to Baton Rouge and play Texas A&M the next week, because you're already anticipating that game. People are already talking about that one, and you got to come in and get a defense that's going to come after you like that the following week. That'll be a big test. The schedule's tough. I just don't see all the pieces aligning themselves to the extent that some other people are talking about for LSU season one under Lane Kiffin.
So here at the network, Cole, it seems to me my outlier opinion on the conference is Alabama. I'm relatively high on Alabama in comparison with some of my peers here. I have them in the national championship game. I have them winning the SEC. I think that they can have some real strong upside. And I kind of believe in DeBoer as a guy who can get the most out of this quarterback position. What do you see with Alabama? Because I kind of trust their defense is going to be sick. Like, that secondary is one of the better ones in the country.
It is, and you got transfer portal defensive linemen from USC and Oregon that could potentially come in and help there. I'm concerned about linebacker depth, but if you get Quay Rousseau healthy off the edge, he can be a monster. And I agree with you. The experience in the back end is going to allow Kane Womack to be so much more multiple starting out. He didn't really get aggressive up front with the front seven until the LSU game last year. And then the back third of the season, he proved that he wanted to be that. I think they want to be that more consistently this year. But you got to have guys that can cover space on the back end if you're going to be able to play aggressive in that manner up front. The offensive line, I think, is going to be better. You brought in two offensive line coaches, two former offensive linemen to be your tight ends coach and your assistant tight ends coach. Essentially, what they're doing there is eating up reps with the offensive linemen working with the tight ends, so they're getting more technical and fundamental coaching on a more consistent basis. A great group of receivers that they're going to lean on. I kind of look at Alabama's secondary and receivers as the same. Groups that are going to be leaned upon on both sides of the ball early to let everything else sort of figure itself out. I think that the receivers can make quarterback's life easy, can take some heat off the run game early. You might see a true freshman at tailback, and that'll be okay because they'll have other areas that they can run the football through the air and do different things. And I think they can win with either quarterback. If it's Austin Mack or Keelan Russell, I think they can win with either one. Now, national championship game, probably not there for me just yet, but Kalen DeBoer has the second best record against top 25 opponents of any SEC coach. Only Kirby Smart's been better. So I trust him like you do, trust Kane Womack, trust the offensive staff that he's brought in and what they've built there. So I'm with you, Alabama, probably going to be ahead of where a lot of people have them.
All right, we'll get you out of here on this in the last 90 seconds. Are the additions in the transfer portal along the offensive line for Texas going to be enough to let us see the true version of Arch Manning that we all expect?
Maybe. But I'm not even over as confident as a lot of people are. The pieces that are returning, I love getting Cole Hudson back. I don't like the way you got him back. I don't like a guy being in an NFL camp, then all of a sudden he comes back and plays college football. But I do believe that's a very good player that you're adding to that roster. Goosby's a guy that has all the talent in the world, but still has a ways to go being a refined offensive lineman. And that group got bullied at times. And very rarely did they push people around. That's what I need to see. Listen, that's kind of the story for Texas for me. They've got every sports card at the dealership. They're fast. They run well. They jump high. They make one-handed catches. Who's going to do the dirty work for the Texas Longhorns this year? Who are the guys that like to do the things that most people don't like to do? Every team's got them that wins championships. Every team that competes for championships has them. Who are the program guys? I just wonder if there's enough of that for Texas to truly make a run and then go win a national championship. But a lot of that that I just referenced will start up front with that offensive line.
Cole, we appreciate a couple minutes. Thank you, sir. Big fan of your work, and we'll talk again soon.
Thank you very much.
Cole Kubelik again, SEC Network. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, Will Hill is going to join us. The Buff Man himself's got some plays in Major League Baseball. Got to talk a little bit about football if we have some time as well. Don't miss it. That's coming up on the other side.
Here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Most people think sports betting is about picking winners. Ungambled is built on a different idea, matched betting and arbitrage. It's a tool that teaches you how to use sportsbook bonuses and promotional offers to capture value whether or not your side covers. And Ungambled backs it up. If you don't turn a profit on your bankroll in 8 weeks, they refund your membership. To learn more, start with the free guide at ungambled.com/VSIN. That's ungambled.com/VSIN. Use promo code VSIN for 10% off. Bet sharp, look square. All right, we are back here on Money Moves, and it's a Friday. Just got some great news from our producer, Justin. Absolutely fantastic. I'm in a great mood now after a rough start to the day. I know you all care about how my day is going. But then it took a turn right before we come back on the air. Let's head out to the Progressive guest line. Welcome in one Will Hill, who was in studio last week and now is far away. And it might be for the best that you are back on the East Coast, because fisticuffs might have ensued during the break, though probably wouldn't have gone well for me, considering your stature. You decided to denigrate the memory of Russell Westbrook. Flags should fly at half mast today and yesterday, because Russell Westbrook has decided to retire, and you come in and you crap all over his memory? How dare you?
Well, this is a continuation, because Femi and I kind of got into this the other night on primetime, and Femi's a Westbrook guy. I am not. And then I saw on Twitter people taking sides. Chris Massaro was like, oh, I agree with Femi. You, I agree with Femi. No, all these people, everyone was on Team Femi. So I'm just surprised. You're such an analytically driven guy. And Westbrook, I just watched him for years, not only the Lakers, but these other teams, shoot 30% from three and shoot three after three after three. And I just put it this way. I admit, first ballot Hall of Famer. And, you know, 9-time All-NBA, only 2 first team, but that's a Hall of Fame career. If he was your best player, you were never going to win anything. And you can't say, well, he didn't win anything. He didn't play with anybody great. He played with LeBron. He played with Durant and Harden. He played with Harden again. He played with Kawhi, Jokic, Anthony Davis. Paul George was third in MVP. He never won anything. I just feel like if he was your best player, you're kind of like a 40-win team, one and done. So I was never a big Westbrook guy. Just felt unhinged to me. I understand the talent and the accolades. He had a long career, made plenty of money. So, you know, he doesn't care, I'm sure, what I think, but was never my cup of tea.
So this is always a dangerous game where I ask a question expecting an answer, but your biggest gripe, and I'll phrase it like this to maybe get the answer I want, the biggest gripe in general with the association over the last few years has been what?
I know.
Right?
The guys don't play. He played, yeah, he played hard. Play. I get it.
Yeah, and that to me is one of the big things. And I can separate, because you're right, like analytically, if we're like building teams, whatever it is. But when you wanted a dude, especially at the beginning of his career, who worked his ass off every second of every game that he played, at least tried his very best every time out, gave you highlights. And if you're just like a basketball fan aesthetically, he gave you a very pleasing game at times, especially when he was at the peak of his power. So I've just always been a Westbrook guy. He's been a really good player, a fun player to watch. And he's got a lot of good stories. If you go back and watch, Jeff Teague had a great story about him when he was playing against him and he hit him with the Rock the Baby, and Teague tells him, like, man, I don't care, to which Westbrook yells at him, that's the problem. And he goes at him the entire game. Like, Westbrook's a fun, cool player, and I think it's a bummer. And also, I mean, I got really dark with Stormy the other day. It's also just the normal, like, oh, my God, impending mortality. He played for 18 years. I thought it was only 12. It's insane that his career's already over, but we don't want to waste any more time on that. A sad day for me, at the very least, when it comes to Russell Westbrook.
Go ahead. One more, the last thing on that. Like I said, he played with a lot of great players. None of them seemed to want to stick around him too long, whether it was him getting traded or them leaving. It's, you know, people don't say, oh, he's, you know, great to play with. Those guys that played with him didn't seem to enjoy it and stick around with him very long.
Stick in the mud. Will Hill joins us here on Money Moves at Not The Will Hill up on X. All right, we'll move on. We're friends. We're friends, I promise. Let's talk a little baseball and hit on some of these games. First off, I want to actually start with this Detroit play that you've got, because lo and behold, Tigers sell off Tarek Skubal, and we're all making, at least I was making fun of them, quitters, losers, what are you doing at the trade deadline? In control of a wild card spot, and now have a lot to play for here. What are we doing with Detroit today?
Yeah, I mean, don't blink, but if Detroit, who hosts the White Sox here for three games, if they sweep the series late Sunday afternoon, early Sunday evening, the Detroit Tigers will be the AL Central leaders. They're only 2.5 games out. They get three games against the White Sox, and I like them tonight. That minus 164 I'm seeing does not look correct. I believe it's closer to minus 120 in the minus 130 range, unless we've had a pitching change here. I had Job going against Newcomb here, and I'll pull up the line as we're looking. But I like the Tigers. I mean, that's a really good bullpen. Minus 129 at DraftKings. Yeah, Job against Newcomb. I like Detroit. That's look at the run differential. Now, I know Riley Green's out. He's a big piece. But the bullpen, the lineup, I just think Detroit's the better team, and it does feel a little bit like Chicago. Maybe leaking oil a little bit. Maybe get a little boost from Castillo, and you can revitalize him. He was really good the other night, but you know what? He's not pitching tonight. I think Detroit has a good series here, and I think it starts tonight with a win. And man, plus 400 to win the Central. Shop around, maybe get a little better. I have certainly made worse wagers, as I like to say. I think Detroit is very live to win this division.
All right, let's talk about Boston and Pittsburgh as well. Second baseball handicapper today that wants to look at this game. Earlier today, Adam Rosenberg was looking at the first five. You're looking at the first game, the entire game, but both of you looking at the total. What are we looking at between the Red Sox and the Pirates?
I'm on the under. Red Sox have not swung the bats great recently. If you look at a lot of the success, and John Legesa does a great baseball podcast, was talking about this on his podcast, a lot of the success, just pretty fortunate on balls in play. The last month or two when they've been scorching hot, not that hot the last week. The Pirate offense has slumped. You got two pitchers, you know, with some pedigree. Bennett was a pretty high pick. He's pitched well. Bubba Chandler, I keep waiting for him to pop. Maybe now is the time. Two of his last four starts, scoreless, 6-plus against the Mets and 6-plus against the Yankees. He's got the stuff, 95th percentile in fastball. The command's not always there. He walks too many people, doesn't really live on the ground, but the bullpen's pitching well. The Red Sox bullpen, best ERA in baseball, so it's hard to get to 9 here. I know under 8's dangerous because if it's 4-4, it automatically goes over. You're getting a 9th run somewhere, but I think we stay under the 8, all those things considered.
All right, what do we do with the Bronx Bombers? Not bombing as much, and especially yesterday, 0-for-5, I believe it was, with runners in scoring position, only 4 hits. Now they get Toronto. Total here is running around 8. Are we going to play the under again?
I think until the Yankees get a little healthier on offense, the under is not a bad way to go because even though there's not that many guys in the bullpen you trust, it's a solid bullpen when you look at the numbers. Their pitching's great. I mean, they send to the mound every day, either Fried or Schlittler or Cole. I mean, they've got good pitching. Warren's been bad, but you get the idea. Good pitching and bad offense. They just have not swung the bats well. I mean, look, you're down Bellinger, who was an all-star, all-star game MVP, Judge, one of the great hitters of all time of his generation, Stanton, you know, borderline Hall of Famer. That's a lot of guys to be down, and they're down all of them. And, you know, Rice has cooled off a little bit. I saw actually Dylan Dingler has surpassed him in MVP odds. That was a good bet. That's not going to get home at 150-1, unfortunately. And that's starting to move closer to the 150-1 than the 3-1 it was when Judge got hurt. But not a lot of offense. Good pitching. Bieber's been okay. He hasn't been great, but I'll take my chances here again, going the with the under 8 here.
All right, right now, and Will Hill's with us on the Progressive Guest Line. You can follow him up on Twitter at NotTheWillHill. We do have a game underway. Chicago Cubs, top of the third. Clay Holmes in his second start as a Cub. So far, looking pretty good after a rough outing against the Royals the first time around in a Cubs uniform. So let's talk about this Cubs team. A lot of people really buying at the trade deadline what they bought, and I would agree with it for the most part. I think we're also learning, too, Will, that the Dodgers aren't infallible. They're going to be very good, and they're going to be very hard to beat in a best of seven. But this Cubs team has a lot going for them. How are we going to buy on Chicago at this moment right now from a future standpoint?
FanDuel has 16-1 to be the one seed. Now, I didn't like the fact that they dropped the game to Milwaukee yesterday. The Dodgers had to beat. Cubs had a game they were favored. They went into Thursday down 3 games. You're thinking, man, Brewers are playing the Dodgers. Maybe you cut this to 2 for the weekend, and who knows, you can really gain some ground. It went backwards, which is the problem when you're trailing. It's hard to make up this kind of deficit when you go backwards, but you mentioned it. They really improved the pitching staff. The offense is good. The defense is good. And they got pitchers that play into that defense, especially that infield defense, that get ground balls. They still play Milwaukee 7 times between now and September 8th, September 9th. So you can take care of business on the field. Maybe go like 5-2 against them. Wipe out that deficit. Dodgers kind of scuffling their bullpen. Their lineup have issues. To me, 16-1 is just too long for a team with this much talent. So Cubs, 16-1 to be the one seed is one I like.
All right, before we get you out of here, last 90 seconds, we are getting closer to week 0 in college football, but preseason is underway. Have you been betting preseason? Did you have anything today or tomorrow?
Today, no. Tomorrow, I like Minnesota. It sounds like they're going to play their guys at least a little bit, and that went from like +1.5 to +2. I would say that, and I say it a lot, but it's worth repeating. These 1.5s, 2s, 2.5s, very valuable in the preseason because teams, unlike your Colts who played for the tie, and that was bizarre to kick a long field goal to try to tie the game and give the ball back to the Pats. Teams try to avoid the tie, so if you're down 7 late, you go for 2 often. So don't lay those 1.5s, 2s. You're better off at the money line. But Minnesota would be one I like. I would just say this, and you probably can understand this and relate to this, JVT. From a content standpoint, the NFL is tough because you see, all right, this team's playing their guys. This team's not playing their guys. The line moves a field goal in an hour or two, and like it's just hard to talk about these bets because the lines move so much and so dramatically. But it was fun last night. It was fun to have it back, have a bunch of games to watch and to bet on. So I'll be watching it. I would lean towards the dogs tonight, if anything. I don't like laying over 3.5 or too many points in these preseason games, but glad it's back for sure.
Also, closing line value, Bupkis. If you bet the opening lines that move 2 or more points, you win 2 and 3 against the spread. I had -0.5 in the first half for the Raiders. It closed 2.5, and guess what? Didn't even get close. Will, good to talk to you, buddy. Thank you very much.
All right, see you guys. Thanks.
Yep. At Not The Will Hill, Should Have Bet More podcast as well. Second hour of Money Moves coming up next.